ready to go green? Then it's time to join RNN's The Business Side of Green, the podcast radio series that talks about the green economy, profiles sustainable business leaders, showcases renewable technologies, and introduces you to the companies and organizations that are making the world a better place by putting sustainability first. And now, here's your host, Peter Arpan.
Welcome back, everyone, to Renewable Now. We are on 1320 WRNP, WARA, at flagship stations. We are on RenewableNowNetwork.com. And, you know, it's been a really good 6 weeks. We came through Earth Month, and Earth Month was really fashioned this year around fixing plastic pollution. Big, big issue. When, you know, when we think about sustainability at RNN, we think about two major components: energy, so what it takes to drive the economy in balance with preserving natural capital, and with waste. Waste, of course, is becoming so different, so diverse, so complex. You know, is it waste to energy? Is it garbage to gold? You know, if we separate, if we recycle, if we reuse, if there's no real end of life, you know, have we in fact started to manage one of the big components of building a cleaner, healthier world? Plastic, of course, as we know, is a huge element. We've given you the data, the amount of plastic we have produced over decades, the amount that remains, which is basically 100%, the amount that is in landfills, the amount that is degrading into soil and water systems and obviously oceans. And so what do we mean when we say fixing the plastic pollution problem? I mean, what is that fix? And who is it on? Is it on manufacturers? Is it on consumers? Is it on retailers? And, you know, think about it. For us, it's a staple of life. It is something we use probably daily. Think about your own life. You know, how much plastic have you used today? How much have you used this month? How much have you used this year? Have you materially changed? Have you cut down? Have you found alternatives? If not, why not? And so what does that fix look like? Is it around recycling and reusing? Or, as we will talk today with Teresa Clark, who is the Vice President of Product Development and Sustainability with Enso Plastics in Phoenix, Arizona, is it in the manufacturing? Is it, in fact, looking at a different type of plastic? Do we look at additives, microbes? Do we have some level of biodegradability? Does it become, you know, for the plastic bank, it became a currency, but does it become more of an organic, natural? Can it break down? And will it not pollute and fill our landfills? And Teresa, we're at Enso, where she develops sustainable solutions for the materials industry, and I would encourage everyone after the show to go to the website. There's some really good videos. This can be a little complex, and we will certainly ask Teresa to dumb it down for us and take us through the process, but there's some great videos, some great background on what they have developed and what solutions they are bringing to the tables. One of her key focuses is the development of technologies that accelerate the natural bioremediation of materials in the waste environment. And if you don't know what that is, I don't either. That's fine. We'll find that out in the next 58 minutes. It is on that subject that Teresa created and instructed a continuing education course for the PR College of Engineers. Teresa also developed an educational program and an RNN, right, on the business side of green. We believe very much that a big part of the solution, in addition to sharing best practice and great leaders and innovators and new companies, is in and around education for every single person in every part of the world. And this program for middle school children to educate them on plastics, degradation, and the environment, which has been used in several private schools. So, Teresa, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Peter. I appreciate the opportunity. I look forward to a productive discussion together.
Me too, and I hope I'm not stumbling over words the whole time, but that's all right. We'll just let you do more of the talking. And here, Teresa, we love startups, new technology innovation. So I think for me, first is really more about the origins of the company, the ideas, the science, the engineering, the team behind Enso.
Yeah, so Enso was created back in 2008. And unlike most companies that somebody sees a product and says, hey, this is a great product, I want to start a company and sell it, Enso was organized with just simply a mission. And the mission was plastics are a problem in our environment, and what can be done to fix that, to make them integrate more effectively, make them less of a problem. And so the company was started simply with that mission, to seek out technologies, and if no technologies were available, to develop the technologies. So it was a fairly small group of engineers, microbiologists, and chemists that came together really simply with that mission.
And there's a mantra on your site. It says, plastics make it possible. And I love that because that is so key that we are going, in fact, to use plastics and use them at a high level. And Enso makes it responsible. So tell me more about the name, the logo, and what is that symbolic of?
Yeah, so, and you have that absolutely right. Plastics make it possible. You know, a lot of times when people think of plastics, they simply just think of plastic packaging. You know, they're water bottles, they're coffee pods. But plastics impact so much more. You know, your clothing, most of it's all made of plastics. Your carpets are made of plastics. Your furniture is made of plastic. Your automobile is made of plastic. Medical supplies are made of plastic. So it's an integral part of our modern society. We're not going to get away from plastics. And plastics actually benefit us in many ways. And so the key was that plastics do make it possible for modern day life, but we needed a way to make it responsible. And that's where Enso came in with the company mission of making these plastics more responsible from an environmental perspective.
And there's a logo that kind of suggests, is it circular? Does it come back in full circle? I wasn't quite sure if I understood maybe the symbolism behind that.
Yeah, so actually the name Enso is a Zen term. I don't know if you're familiar with Zen.
Yes.
So Enso is a Zen term, and the circle surrounding the logo of the company is called the Enso as well. And what that means in Zen-ish, if you want to call it, is exactly that. It's that everything, wherever it originates, it's bringing it back full circle. So that, and it's kind of builds into that whole circular economy perspective, keeping things in flow, but always returning something to a point of usefulness.
Yeah, and I think it kind of describes too the level of responsibility we believe, and a lot of people believe now, should be on producers, right, of something that could become waste. And we still have just an awful record of in terms of it's like 99% of what we produce ends up in a landfill. So we've got a long way to go. So as you think, and your team that you assembled, and you started to think about how big is this issue? You know, plastic pollution, the challenge, how big is it? How did you start to get your hands around that, and then how you wanted to approach the beginnings of some solutions?
Yeah, you know, and that actually was something that was an interesting journey for us, because if you watch media, news reports, things of that sort, primarily what people seem to be concerned with is, you know, marine plastics or littered plastics. So what we, as a foundation of the company, we made the determination that the first thing we were going to do was simply just gather data. And it was going to be a data-based solution, a data-based company, and not emotionally driven by, you know, what we're hearing out there. So we started doing the research of, okay, well, where is our plastic going? So because if we don't know where it's going, we don't know that the solutions that we enact are actually going to make a difference. And with that, what we found was about 90% of every plastic produced, you know, especially here in North America, is going into a landfill.
Yeah, that's right.
So if we have 90% going into a landfill, we have, you know, less than 1% that goes into a marine environment. And, you know, less than, it's only a few percent that gets littered, and about 6 to 9%, depending on where you're at, that gets recycled. So, you know, from our perspective, the biggest bang for anyone's buck is, okay, well, let's look at this 90%. Because if we can address 90%, with a solution, and then we can start working on the smaller amounts as well.
Well, your data is very good. We're going to just pause for a minute, but your data is very good. And at the business side of Green, that's really our mission too, is to get behind the issues and find the data and find the real story and find the information that we can use to identify what is the key problem, and in terms of production and energy and waste, and how all of those things kind of interrelate and come together, and how can the solutions be financially and economically sound. And when we get back, we're going to start talking about that. We're going to start talking about your innovation and the team approach that you took to what are the solutions and what does it mean in terms of how we use plastic and what happens to it when we're done. Give us a minute. We'll be right back on RNN.
This is RNN.
Our players are challenged every time they hit this field, but every moment in life is a challenge for a young man with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, a lethal genetic disorder. You can help.
Text CURE to 90999 to donate $5. The American Football Coaches Association's Coach to Cure MD. Text CURE to 90999.
Coach to Cure MD, because these young men deserve a chance to win. Right, Dominic?
Right, Coach.
Traditional light bulbs actually generate 9 times more heat than light. Switch to Energy Star light bulbs, and you'll realize just how much cash you are really burning through. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Every year, 40% of all food in the U.S. never gets eaten.
40%. That's almost half the food we produce.
Food waste is a serious problem. It impacts all of us.
And it's expensive. Your family is throwing $1,500 a year in the trash.
We're working hard to put food waste on the chopping block.
And you can do the same at home.
Learn how to cook it, store it, and share it.
Just don't waste it.
Go to SaveTheFood.com.
This is RNN.
Peter Arpin's Business Side of Green, where we shine the green light on sustainability.
Thank you so much for staying with us on RNN. Teresa Clark is the Vice President of Product Development and Sustainability at Enso Plastics. They are an environmental company dedicated to evaluating, validating, and commercializing. We've already talked about some of the data of environmentally sound plastic solutions, as well as educating the industry, government, and NGOs alike. So, Teresa, when you think about, and then we're going to get fully into Enso, what you've been innovating, why is it different, why is it better, but when you think about that 7 to 9% of the plastic that's being recycled, would you say that we need to continue to do that in kind of a traditional way? We need to recycle enough plastic to put it back in to all of the different components that you've talked about previously?
Absolutely. So, but there's a caveat to it. So some plastics are very effective to recycle. So say your plastic water bottle, very effective to recycle. It has a good environmental impact with recycling. Same thing with your HDPE containers. So, your Tide bottle, things of that sort, the colored bottles for cleaners.
Okay.
Those are great to recycle. We have a good infrastructure set up. They're profitable. There's an end market for it. But we need to stop where we have value. So too often people want to recycle everything. So they're putting everything into their recycle bin. And when that gets to the recyclers, it's actually causing more damage to their systems. It slows things down. They end up having to sort it out, send it off to a landfill. They're losing money. And it creates a negative impact on our overall ability to recycle effectively.
Now, if I could stop right there, because I might be one of those that's overzealous, and I think it's a really valuable lesson. I thought, so we're back east, and I know there's limits on what they they can recycle. But I thought part of the sorting process, and I think they're getting more sophisticated on that, is they would actually take some of the things maybe they could not sort here locally, as an example, and send it to a facility that might be able to break it down. But is that a misconception? Should we keep? So if we use food, the little plastic takeouts, we should not throw it in, or the little plastic that you get for butter containers. I mean, tell me where we should stop and not be overzealous.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to your containers that are rigid containers, so they're hard, they're not flexible, that are a number one and a number two, are really the most effective ones to recycle. Okay. So some of your butter containers will be a number two. Great, put them in there. Number four, two and four, you can kind of mix together. And so you can remanufacture most products by mixing the both of them together. Okay. So those not a problem. But when you start getting into things like your polystyrene or your flexible packaging or any kind of films, the cereal bag, you know, all of that stuff, your toothbrush, anything like that is really ineffective. You know, yes, they can sort some of it out, but the more they try to sort it down, the less effective it is. And, you know, all the sortation takes energy, it takes human resources, and people are being exposed to it. So, you know, also if you have chemicals in it, keep in mind of what kind of chemicals you might be exposing somebody that's manually sorting that for. A lot of communities try to add more products into their recycle. So they may say, you know, okay, we'll just put all your plastics in here. That has more to do with contracts and community goals on diversion than it really does from an environmental perspective.
That's a great point. That is a great point. And I hadn't really thought about some of the chemicals and the exposure, and that's a really good point too. So then what is ENSO's ability to take us back to maybe the beginning, back to the production of plastic that will end up in consumers' hands? And how can you innovate something that might be not just valuable, right? Because as you said, the economics play a lot, but truly valuable environmentally.
Yeah, and I think that's being able to step back and take a broader view at things, you know, and staying away from, you know, kind of that folklore of what's environmental and what's not, and just sticking with the data of it. So, you know, with ENSO, we first started off by going, okay, where is most of the plastic going and where is it creating a problem? And that can be an easy solution. You could say, okay, let's do all biodegradable plastic. Let's end it there. It can go away in the soil. People can litter it. It can go away in the ocean, whatever, not a problem. But then you've got to step back and look at what's the usefulness of the plastic. So a lot of those types of plastics aren't going to protect a product. So, you know, you can take a traditional biodegradable plastic and let's say you put your yogurt in it and you want to sell it in a store. Well, that yogurt may now only last and without going bad for 1 to 2 days, maybe.
Yep.
Whereas with a traditional plastic, you have weeks, you know, if not months of shelf stability where that product's not going to go bad. So you risk now increasing the amount of waste because the product isn't being protected appropriately. So it's a fine balance with that. Same thing with sourcing. You know, a lot of times people feel like, okay, let's find an alternative to plastic. So let's go with paper. And if we take a plastic bag, for example, because that's a common thing people think of, a plastic bag or a paper bag. But what most people don't realize is that a plastic bag actually uses more fossil fuel resources to produce than a plastic bag does.
It does, really?
It does. And it's just because the amount of energy required to process paper as opposed to process plastic. So it's always finding that balance and looking at the data of it so that you can make an educated decision that sometimes is a little counterintuitive.
Well, it very much is. And then again, paper, we hope, is mostly from recycled material, but I didn't realize it would use more energy. Now, maybe as that energy becomes cleaner, possibly, right, and is not fossil fuel supplied, maybe that changes the equation, and that's where it gets a little complex. So tell us about ENSO and what you're doing and how you're changing the products and the kind of plastic that we might be using.
Yeah, Peter, and there's actually several products that ENSO produces and sells. Our primary one that I would say is probably 90% of our product sales is one that takes your traditional plastics And it's an additive-based material, meaning that they're going to add it in when they're manufacturing the plastic. Changes the chemistry of the plastic slightly, but makes it so that the microorganisms in the landfill can now recognize it as an organic material. And they can break it down just like they do, you know, spaghetti or a banana peel or your grass clippings, break it down in exactly the same way. Wow. The other one that we have, which is called Enso Renew, is probably what more people would be familiar with. It's a renewable-based plastic. So it's made from the starch that's a waste product from potato processing plants. That's a phenomenal, from an environmental perspective, it's a phenomenal product. But from an overall life cycle perspective, it has limited usage because same thing we were talking about with the yogurt container, it doesn't have the same properties as your traditional plastic, but it's great for things like forks and spoons and, you know, plates, things that are going to be used and disposed of and don't need any kind of stability to them. They don't need to protect anything.
Well, we're going to pause just for a second. So what we'll do is we'll pick it up on the other side. We'll take it from where you produce it to exactly what you just said. What format is it and does it get reused? And what happens when it gets to the landfill? Because in that situation, then maybe we're not as worried about it getting to the landfill and the kind of space we have out there and what we can do with our waste, particularly in some really congested areas, areas that might be around urban centers. Give us a minute. We'll be right back on Renewable Now.
Peter Arpin's Business Side of Green, where we shine the green light on sustainability.
I'm Dustin Lynch. You don't have to listen to country music to know that life can be full of drama. Some of it you just can't control, like your girlfriend running out on you with your best friend. But there's some drama that you can skip.
Skip the drama that comes with not having your high school diploma or equivalency. Find free adult education classes near you and finish your diploma. Visit finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org.
You just need to take that first step and find free classes near you and start moving towards a brighter future and even your college degree.
Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ed Council.
Hey. Oh, hey, Deb. I thought you were the radon test guys.
The who test guys?
Didn't you see the papers Sunday? The Surgeon General issued another lung cancer warning.
Oh, like the cigarette warning?
Yeah. They're saying we have to get our houses tested for radon.
I don't smell any radon in my house.
That's because radon is an odorless, colorless, tasteless gas that seeps into your house from underground.
Does this story have a happy ending?
Yeah. You'll be a lot happier once you get your house tested.
Learn more. Visit the EPA at epa.gov/radon. That's epa.gov/radon.
We're at the beginning of a very new field that is really growing, and so being part of that is very exciting.
I know I'm a part of something big.
I believe I am part of a larger movement.
Something that's just starting.
There's a tremendous amount of innovation.
I'm very excited to put into practice what I'm learning here.
It's a new way to learn.
I'm getting an opportunity to learn from the best.
We give you the big picture of sustainability.
This is RNN, the Renewable Now Network, where sustainability makes sense.
I'm Anne. I'm a scientist.
Recycling takes a team.
Why don't you let me
and me
help you out?
Everyone plays a part. Don't trash.
I love taking stuff apart and building new things out of it.
What could be treasure?
Pal's my most advanced Android.
This is awesome.
You haven't seen anything yet.
Give your cardboard box another life. Recycle.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy. Which is great, because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
The Business Side of Green, showcasing the people, companies, institutions, and technologies driving the green economy.
We are with Teresa Clark. She is the Vice President of Product Development and Sustainability at Enso Plastics. and they are a company dedicated to the commercialization of environmentally sound plastic. And they also tell us, think differently. Think differently about this product and perhaps how we use it. So, Teresa, two types of product that Enso produces. One has an additive that goes into what sounds like traditional plastic that allows the microorganisms to attack it and break it down so it becomes more biodegradable. And the other, Enso Renew, is made from a stock, I think you said spent potato products, basically. The starch that allows you to manufacture what are more environmentally friendly products. Tell us why, generally, these two products are better, maybe better for the users and ultimately better for the consumers. What do they displace? How do they improve the end result of plastic?
Yeah, in fact, let me give you a perfect example. We have a customer that recently started producing coffee pods with Enso Restore, which is the additive that will help it break down more effectively. And they did that because they looked at coffee pods. A year ago, your Keurig coffee pods, you didn't really have much of an option except put it in the trash. Everybody got upset because, of course, it was a lot of waste going into a landfill. We all heard the news about how many times you could wrap around the earth with the coffee pods that we've used. So, you know, then Keurig came out with their idea to build a recyclable coffee pod. Problem being is that our waste management infrastructure isn't equipped to sort such a small item. And for them to even do that, the consumer, when you get done brewing your coffee, you have to wait for that pod to cool. You have to tear the lid off. You have to scoop out the coffee grinds, put those in the trash, rinse out the coffee pod, and then put it in your recycle bin. And once you do that, most of your recyclers, they're filtering it off and putting it in the landfill. So when they looked at that, they wanted a solution that actually provided value. So they came to us. They decided to use Enso Restore. And so their life cycle of their coffee pod now is the consumer brews the coffee. The consumer puts that coffee pod in the trash, which is what they were going to do anyway with it. When that coffee pod goes into the landfill, it's going to break down into biogas, which biogas is the same thing as your compressed natural gas. Mm-hmm. And the landfills, you've got 80% of all of our waste in North America goes to landfills that are pulling this gas out, and they're using it to fuel vehicles. They're powering entire production facilities with it. They're powering cities with it. It's considered a renewable natural energy source. So for them, now the coffee pod and the coffee both are breaking down into biogas and providing a value in the landfill, which also reduces space in the landfill as it breaks down.
And it's a great example. And they've put a lot of money into these facilities. That whole waste to energy is a fascinating part of the business. Keep giving us more examples. And you mentioned one, the starch base maybe would be more for what we might use for takeout for plastic. I don't know, spoons and forks. But give us some more examples of on how the end result is good with your products.
Yeah, so, you know, again, with the starch one, you have some limited applications with it. You're not going to use it for packaging, but you can use it for food service type products. It's a great application if you're in an area, say like San Francisco, where you have commercial composting available, simply because you're not going to have other plastics contaminating the compost system.
That's right. That's right. And by the way, that's starting to get mandated, right, in more and more places. On the composting?
It is getting mandated in more and more places where you have very dense populations.
Yes.
Not so much in rural areas because it's not economically or environmentally feasible to try to transport food and green waste.
And the landfill tipping fees are cheap in a lot of places too.
They are. And, you know, to be honest, landfills have a bad reputation because back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, we really didn't do a good job designing and managing our landfills. Today, it's very different. Today, they're highly managed. We're pulling energy out of them. We're turning them into a resource. There's a lot of new designs coming out with landfills that even create reusable landfills where they can put all of the waste in it. They harvest all the energy. And then they pull out the resulting soil, sort the metals out of it, and then reuse the space.
You know, that is such a great point. And to the and also, as you know, even in those where they've capped some of the old landfills, there's a lot of renewable energy sites on there now.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, the big, and this is where we come in with the think differently, is there's a lot of preconceptions that people come in to sustainability with that we need to pull away, so that one, we can just look at the raw data, make decisions, and we can also look at trends and where things are going. You know, the truth is consumers only want to be inconvenienced to a certain degree. They do have a responsibility with sustainability, just like the manufacturers do when it comes to plastics, but we can't force them. You know, you can build legislation and all of that, but you're still not going to force everybody to do exactly what you want. So if a manufacturer has an option of using something like Enso Restore, their plastic product is exactly the same. Shelf stability, the protection abilities, the feel, the touch, the consumer can't tell the difference. They can still recycle it, but if they don't recycle it and it's going into a landfill, then it becomes that renewable energy.
And as you said, it creates to the biogas, which is being captured in most of the places. And I would think would continue because, again, what was maybe a liability before becomes an asset as you capture it and turn it into a new energy source. And I think, you made a very valid point where, and we've interviewed a lot of these kind of quasi-government agencies that are managing landfills, and the data is much better. The science, the engineering, the technology, the investment, they really are more state-of-the-art and much more mindful of how they impact a community. So one of the things I'm wondering, Teresa, and maybe you just answered it, but is it generally then fairly easy for you and Enso to convince, because you sell directly to manufacturers, is that right?
Correct.
And you encourage them. You convince them ultimately to use your product in their manufacturing of the plastic. Is that right?
Correct.
And how difficult is that? Does that become a relatively easy sell because you started to talk about, hey, I mean, it's what you do. It fits in. It's not that difficult. We're not asking a lot. And hopefully we're not costing you a lot more money.
Yeah, actually, not surprisingly, it's a very simple process. And from the economic perspective, you mentioned, does it cost a lot of money? It actually only adds a few percent increase in their cost. So, for example, we've talked some about water bottles. So for a bottle of water, it's going to cost about an additional tenth of a cent for them to implement it. So if you think about that from a manufacturing perspective and a society perspective, if you have a plastic bottle and a lot of places have your deposit laws, up to 10 cents per bottle, a deposit required to build the recycling stream and infrastructure for recycling that bottle. The cost difference is significant. So it's 100 times more expensive for a deposit law than to implement our technology, both of which provide a value. From a production side, very simple. No new machinery, no new costs. It's very, very simple. The biggest hurdle that we run into is just getting people to think differently. You know, we've said that a few times during the show, because a lot of your small and mid-size companies, companies that have very savvy sustainability managers that really understand the breadth of sustainability, it's very easy for them to grasp. Some of your larger organizations, the main brands that you see in every store that you go to, are a little more hesitant because, not that they don't understand the technology or appreciate it, it's more that they're afraid that there might be consumer backlash if they tell them that it's okay, that landfills are, have a beneficial purpose in our waste management system.
That's a great point. We're going to pause just for a second, but that's one of the things I want to get into on the other side is the kind of that acceptance from the retailer to the consumer. And then, as you said, to the education and the understanding, because maybe, again, I've been overzealous and I need to temper that down. And if I know I can put more into a traditional bin and it'll go to the landfill and it will have a positive outcome, so the better. Give us a minute. We'll be right back on RNN.
The Business Side of Green, showcasing the people, companies, institutions, and technologies driving the green economy.
Every year, 40% of all food in the U.S. never gets eaten.
40%. That's almost half the food we produce.
Food waste is a serious problem. It impacts all of us.
And it's expensive. Your family is throwing $1,500 a year in the trash.
We're working hard to put food waste on the chopping block.
And you can do the same at home.
Learn how to cook it, store it, and share it.
Just don't waste it.
Go to SaveTheFood.com.
Our players are challenged every time they hit this field. But every moment in life is a challenge for a young man with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, a lethal genetic disorder. You can help.
Text CURE to 90999 to donate $5. The American Football Coaches Association's Coach to Cure MD. Text CURE to 90999.
Coach to Cure MD, because these young men deserve a chance to win. Right, Dominic?
Right, Coach.
Traditional light bulbs actually generate 9 times more heat than light. Switch to Energy Star light bulbs, and you'll realize just how much cash you are really burning through. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Hey. Oh, hey, Deb. I thought you were the radon test guys.
The who test guys?
Didn't you see the paper Sunday? The Surgeon General issued another lung cancer warning.
Oh, like the cigarette warning?
Yeah. They're saying we have to get our houses tested for radon.
I don't smell any radon in my house.
Oh, that's because radon is an odorless, colorless, tasteless gas that seeps into your house from underground.
Does this story have a happy ending?
Yeah. You'll be a lot happier once you get your house tested.
Learn more. Visit the EPA at epa.gov/radon. That's epa.gov/radon.
Want to stay in the green? Then listen to Peter Arpin's The Business Side of Green.
Thank you so much, Michael. And I'm sorry if there was a slight delay. And welcome back to Teresa Clark. She is the Vice President of Product Development and Sustainability at Enso Plastics. And we are thinking differently about plastics. Teresa, would it be fair to say, when we think about Enso Restore and Enso Renew, the products that you've been bringing to the table, the alternatives that you're giving to manufacturers, would it be fair to say that generally with your plastic or the plastic they make with your formula, that there would be generally a good end result with those products?
Absolutely, yes.
And if somebody was to think critically, to say, this doesn't work about it, or this doesn't make sense, either environmentally or economically, things that I'm sure your team kind of struggled through in the early stages, what would that be? What would be the things that maybe don't work well about the process?
You mean as far as the negative aspects of the technology?
Yeah. You know how there's always some aspect, right? Some element that either we didn't think about or is a little different outcome than we thought. I mean, we want it to be all positive, and as you know, we want to all participate. We're going to talk about that. But is there anything, I guess, from a critic's point of view that would say, no, this doesn't make sense?
Yeah, let me go over that with you. So there's a couple of things. So when you're designing, and again, let's just talk the landfill and plastic. When you're designing plastic to effectively convert into energy in our landfill, you have to target a certain time frame for biodegradation, for that breakdown. We can't have it happen fast. It can't happen in a year. It can't happen in 2 years. It needs to happen somewhere between a 5-year period and about a 30-year period. And that's simply because of the infrastructure and the design of landfills. they need time to get the systems in place and get the gas capturing systems built so that they're collecting that gas and it's not going out in the environment. That's great for landfills, and that's what ENSO Restore is built for. But if you want to address, say, a litter issue, it's not going to be the best solution for a litter issue. It's going to take years to go away. Mm. Same thing for the marine environment. If you're concerned about things that are going into the marine environment, it's not the right solution for a marine environment. So just like anything that's a true sustainability solution, there's not a silver bullet. There's not one solution that someone's going to say is going to cure every issue with plastic. You know, so that I would say is the negative aspect. If we could say, yes, it works everywhere perfectly for those specific purposes, you know, yeah, that'd be great, but I'd be lying to you.
And I think that's the message we get out weekly too, right? No silver bullet. It's going to be a complement, a cohesive unity of a thousand, a million different things that bring the right solutions to the table for building a cleaner, healthier environment while keeping an economy alive. And I know on your site you talk about why treat the symptoms, right, when you can cure the disease going right to the source of where we produce some of these things. Now, you and your group have a wonderful commitment to education, and that's what I like a lot, that we need to embrace change, obviously. We need to be mindful of it and aware of it and embrace it. So when you think about that commitment to education, Teresa, where does that go? Does it go to governments, to landfill managers, to the business world like us, where we can get better in terms of how we pick suppliers or how we source material?
You know, I would say it's some of all of that. It also encompasses our obligation to educate ourselves. So, you know, if we're going and we do go and talk with landfill operators, you know, we have an obligation to learn from them just as much as we're trying to teach them. Same thing when we go into the recycling facilities, the MRFs. You know, we may go in there to teach them about our technologies and which ones can recycle effectively with current plastics and which ones shouldn't be recycled. But we also need to learn from them on what are their needs and what does their system look like and how can we build products to integrate more effectively with their systems. You know, and it's a give and take. And I think that's the beauty of education, is having a give and take from both. You know, we do go into a lot of organizations simply just educating them on sustainability factors. You know, I would say that our sales team probably spends about 80% of their time educating rather than selling.
Outreach, though, and I think you touched on this, Teresa, because, again, it gets a little complex. You mentioned logistics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a big hurdle is how trash gets from one place to the other in a centralized location and then gets sorted and then sent somewhere else, right, to be reused. When you think about your product, your education, your discussion with governments who have to worry about that, the MRFs and so forth, what about the logistics? Does what you do change that at all, the transportation and the complexity around that?
That's actually one of the beauties of the technology, is because we went through and built an understanding of how our waste management system works before we developed a product, we built it to integrate with the current infrastructure. So nothing else has to happen than is already happening with it. And that's, you know, makes it very simple. Simple for consumers, simple for manufacturers to know that consumers are going to do the right thing because that's what they're already doing. We don't have to build new educational programs to tell a consumer, you know, okay, now tear the lid off your coffee pod, dump it out, rinse it out, don't put the grinds down the sink, make sure the grinds go in your trash. You know, it can be very complex and it can be a very slow turning boat when you have to start changing behavior.
Oh, you know, it is so true, Teresa. Again, it's probably one of the things we say every week. Changing human behavior is the hardest part of what we do. Without question. It, you know, they even in media, how many times do they say they have to hit somebody with a message before it gets through our thick heads, right? We don't like change.
Exactly. And that's why we built the technology to try to incorporate what current behavior is.
And yeah, and exactly right, right? How you can fit in to a stream, to a system that is certainly based on global standards is working pretty well. Before we pause, though, I want you to take me through this. On your site, I saw, I think it was a blog, an article about recycling, and can it cause mental illness? And we know pollution and some of its impact on health. We always feel as though, hey, we should better evaluate, let's say, the use of fossil fuel against, respiratory rate problems as an example. So when you go into the MRFs, when you think about the waste stream, when you think about recycling, again, do you see a more positive impact? If recycling has some kind of damaging ramifications, do you see what you're doing as helping eradicate some of that?
So really what the ultimate goal is to have stuff put in its proper place. So for a MRF where they're sorting plastics, we want the plastics to go there that are effective in that system. What's been happening traditionally is we send a lot of our trash to the MRFs. They sort out the stuff that they want. They try to bail all the rest, the mixture of the stuff, and they've been shipping it off to China. It's been a huge environmental and health issue in China with all of these mixed plastics coming in,
which is
a big factor of why they now will no longer accept plastic, recycle it into China. So they just cut it all off because they felt like we were just dumping our trash there. And you know, they care about their citizens. They care about the environment as well. I know some people don't believe they do, but their new government is really trying to build the green aspect in China and care about their country and the environment there. So they finally just had to say, no more, we're not taking any of it.
And that was just a huge shift. I mean, you take out just a massive buyer, consumer, and even on the East Coast here, we would see, you know, ship after ship leaving with all these metals and discarded material that were heading over to the Far East to China. And all of a sudden it stopped, as you said. And everybody's like, now what? Now where is the value? Where is the buyer? How do we get rid of this? Or do we go back to what we were doing where we're dumping it, we're filling it, we're capping it, and we are leaving it there? When we get back, we're going to finish up with Teresa. We're going to talk about this circular economy and sustainability, you know, what is key to that. And we're going to finish up by talking about, again, thinking differently. How do we kind of discern what we buy? Is there a label? Is there something that tells us that we can buy more smartly and that we can contribute to this world of kind of helping to fix the concept, the challenge around plastic pollution. Give us a minute and we will be right back on RNN.
Want to stay in the green? Then listen to Peter Arpin's The Business Side of Green.
This is RNN.
Our players are challenged every time they hit this field. But every moment in life is a challenge for a young man with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, a lethal genetic disorder. You can help.
Text CURE to 90999 to donate $5. The American Football Coaches Association's Coach to Cure MD. Text CURE to 90999.
Coach to Cure MD, because these young men deserve a chance to win. Right, Dominic?
Right, Coach.
Traditional light bulbs actually generate 9 times more heat than light. Switch to Energy Star light bulbs, and you'll realize just how much cash you are really burning through. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Every year, 40% of all food in the U.S. never gets eaten.
40%. That's almost half the food we produce.
Food waste is a serious problem. It impacts all of us.
And it's expensive. Your family is throwing $1,500 a year in the trash.
We're working hard to put food waste on the chopping block.
And you can do the same at home.
Learn how to cook it, store it, and share it.
Just don't waste it.
Go to SaveTheFood.com.
I'm Dustin Lynch. You don't have to listen to country music to know that life can be full of drama. Some of it you just can't control, like your girlfriend running out on you with your best friend. But there's some drama that you can skip.
Skip the drama that comes with not having your high school diploma or equivalency. Find free adult education classes near you and finish your diploma. Visit finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org.
You just need to take that first step and find free classes near you and start moving towards a brighter future and even your college degree.
Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ed Council.
Peter Arpin's Business Side of Green, where we shine the green light on sustainability.
Our guest today is Teresa Clark, and she works for a great company, Enso Plastics, terrific company, environmental company dedicated to evaluating, validating, and commercializing, and changing the way we view plastic solutions. Teresa, before we finish up, one quick thing, maybe give us your websites, your social media. Tell us a little bit about some of the video, some of the other things that are out there to help us discern more about what you do.
Yeah, the website is ensoplastics.com. That's E-N-S-O, plastics.com. There's quite a bit of information on our site. Social media we're not quite as active with since we deal directly with manufacturers and not quite so much with the public. That may be somewhere that, you know, we need to work on in the future, is getting a little more communication out. Just, you know, social media for the general population.
And that might make sense, and it kind of segues into where I wanted to go in the last part of the segment. And Teresa, so, you know, we think a lot about, and you talk about it on your site, right, the kind of this circular economy, and we talk about responsibility. So if I'm going to sell into a part of the world, should I be responsible for the waste? What happens at the end? What does that look like in a circular economy? What comes back? As you think about what you offer manufacturers and what you have brought to the marketplace, does it in fact help them become more accountable? And does it help us as consumers become more accountable?
The answer from a consumer's perspective would really come down to what a consumer chooses to buy. Everything from manufacturers is ultimately driven by what a consumer chooses to buy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you go to the store, you may not think it makes a difference which product you're choosing, but it really does. It's not just what your personal preference is. It's telling manufacturers what they should produce more of.
And how do we buy smart, though, Teresa? How do we look for the kind of things that you put your, you know, your package around, or they put the, you know, with your product, their package around?
Yeah, you definitely have to start reading packaging to understand. I know that's difficult when you're at the store. You don't really want to read packaging, but reading packaging and doing a little bit of research, you know, to understand, you know, something says it's recyclable. Is it actually recyclable or is it not recyclable? You know, it's a little difficult to navigate. I know there are, and maybe we can talk about this at some future date, but there are some environmental sustainability certification programs that are being developed. They should be out here within the next month or two that are looking to give a seal on products if they integrate effectively in our waste system.
So how would you fit into that? How would Enso fit into that?
Enso would fit into it because, one, with our materials, it's still recyclable. So if you wanted to use our technology in a bottle of water, that bottle can still be recycled with other bottles. If it's not recycled, it's going into a landfill and it's being converted into energy. So it's providing a value proposition either way. And that's
so
what...
Oh, the way you approach it is you're really feeding a couple of different things, but generally there's value, if I understand everything you've told us, there is value in the products, the plastics that you're helping to produce. There can be a kind of a good tail on the end of that thing.
Exactly. And you mentioned the circular economy. I'll just take a few minutes to go over this because a lot of people don't think about the details of it. Circular economy is all about keeping materials in flow.
Yep.
Keeping things valuable. Sustainability is all about our environmental impact. From a circular economy perspective, if we look at coffee, a coffee can be packaged in a can, it can be packaged in a rigid plastic container, or it can be packaged in a flexible package. From the circular economy perspective, we should be packaging it all in a can because it has the best environmental profile when you look at the recycling. You can recycle aluminum as many times as you want. It never changes. The plastic container, you can recycle 3 to 4 times before the plastic's no longer usable and it has to go to a landfill. Flexible packaging, not recycled at all. So from circular economy, we should be moving everything towards that aluminum can. But from a sustainability perspective, when we look at the life cycle analysis, even including the recycling of it, that flexible bag has the least environmental impacts, even though it's never recycled.
Now, that is really interesting. So your advice, and there's a great example, in a practical, probably everybody buys coffee, a lot of it on Amazon and ship. So you would say to us, buy it in the packaging.
The flexible packaging from a sustainability perspective is absolutely your best option. Hmm. It doesn't feel like it. Again, it's that counterintuitive
right.
nature of some things. But from the data, that's simply what it tells us. And that's where Enso comes in, is to take something like that flexible packaging and by making it convert into a renewable energy at disposal, now we bring it into the circular economy. So now we're creating value out of what would normally be the most sustainable option.
And in the last 2 minutes, and again, that helps me personally start to think about some of these choices, because I believe I've been making some bad choices, and it is so difficult, obviously, to wade through some of the data. When you ask us then to think differently, and we think about improving the environment and the economy, and you think about your role there in Arizona, what in the immediate future maybe can we do as consumers, as wanting to be part of the sustainability effort? Anything else that you can recommend that we can think differently about, in particular about packaging and plastics?
Yeah, and that really is the million-dollar question. Because
yeah.
we do need to think differently. There's a very wise man that said we can't solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. And that's exactly the truth. We've got to step back and start thinking about things differently. You know, we've been taught as a society that plastics are bad, you know, paper's good, aluminum's good, but it's not always the case. And so we need to move away from thinking of things always in certain buckets, that everything can change depending on what you're doing with it. You know, if you're going to take that, you talked about the coffee can, if you're going to take a coffee can and you want to keep that can, like you know, my grandfather used to do, and use it for storing items and stuff,
yep.
You know what, that coffee can is probably your best option to buy. You know, if you're buying a durable product, so for me, patio furniture in Phoenix, yeah, plastic might have the best environmental profile for producing, but if I put it out in the sun, it's going to last me 1 year. So for that application, it's not the right solution. So it's really understanding that there's dynamics in everything and that we need to just think a little bit more about what we're doing and then push back up to the retailers. You know, push back up to the manufacturers, get on social media and, you know, start voicing our opinions on things after we do the research.
And obviously, as you know, if we can consume a little bit less, that's always good. But as you said, very, very mindful of the changes around us so that, let's say, plastics or other material are not necessarily all being produced using fossil fuel as an example, then it starts to change our approach. Teresa, great job. Thanks for being with us. Michael, good job. I'm Peter Oppen for Renewable Now and RNN, the show and the network that bring you the business side of green.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of RNN's The Business Side of Green. Don't forget, this show is available on demand on iTunes and Google Play, where we invite you to write a review and subscribe to the series. For more information on today's guest, please visit our website at renewablenownetwork.com. For information on how to become a guest on The Business Side of Green, and if you would like to know about the services and resources provided by Peter Arpan, or would like to have Peter as a guest speaker, email info at renewablenownetwork.com.